Good afternoon, everybody. It's nice to be here on these very long days, just a few days after the longest day of the year, especially in this region of the world that the light is just endless. Most of the 24 hours, it's actually light. It's so special, unique. So the tradition in these kinds of retreat is that every day we give a talk, or rather mostly I would do the talking, and maybe Eleanor would join one day, let's see. And these kind of talks are around the themes, various themes in the Buddhist tradition, but very much relevant to our day-to-day experience. So it is not like an historical kind of a lecture, not at all. And it has to do more about our experience and the way in which we can learn from it and, of course, be free. That's the aim of the practice. So I would like to start with a story, which is a true story, makes it even more interesting. It's a story that appears in one of Jack Kornfield's books, so maybe some of you know it. And it's about a statue that for many, many years was standing in a monastery in Thailand, in a place called Sukhothai. You know this story? No? Yeah. Sukhothai is quite a large city in Thailand, and they had a monastery, many monasteries, but in one of the monasteries they had this ancient Buddha statue, quite big, made out of clay, that was just standing there for generations, and nothing special, it was quite big, but yeah, many, many Buddha statues around. But one day in Thailand, there was a very, very hot weather, maybe like today, and things got quite dry. And especially this statue was starting to have this cracks, thank you, cracks in it. And one of the monks, one of the monks that was especially curious took a torch and climbed on this big statue and looked inside. And what he saw was stunning. What he saw was a glimpse of gold. Apparently, in this very simple clay statue was hiding all those years a huge statue covered with gold. Very precious. True story. Very precious. And of course, when it got revealed, people start coming and paying respect, and the rest is history. This is the story. When we look at this story, again, we can notice very interesting facts about it. For example, the fact that the gold was covered by clay, right? And when we look at the clay, we think, ah, it's not a big deal. It's just something to cover up the real deal. Yeah, the gold, the beauty, the preciousness. And just in the same way, as human beings, we all know all too well these tendencies we have to cover up our preciousness or our vulnerability, if you wish, or sometimes even our beauty, with some kinds of a defense layer, just simply to protect, yeah? It needed protection. Maybe there were armies that came and went, and if they would have seen this statue of gold, which is very, very expensive and precious, they would have taken it, stole it. So the statue was covered, maybe to protect from the weather, who knows? But it was covered. And all of the people thought that their Buddha is made out of simple material, out of clay. They forgot. When we take a good look at this story, we see that oftentimes we have the same tendencies exactly. We forget. We also forget that our innermost being is very precious, very gentle, very dear, and is protected, as I said. And we confuse, you understand my English? Sort of? We confuse the protection layers with the real thing. And it needs some time and effort and energy to peel off those layers that came as a protection layers. In and of themselves, there's nothing wrong with those layers, of course. They came to protect us. But at one point, they are not needed anymore. And they simply obscure, you understand obscure? Yeah? What is real from the view? So it obscures our true nature, it obscures the true natures of the other. Yeah. The concept of Buddha nature, if you heard about this concept, it's a much later concept than the days of the Buddha, by the way. It came much, much later under this Tibetan tradition that we sit in this amazing, beautiful center. But this concept of Buddha nature actually points out exactly to that quality that inside, doesn't matter who we are, what gender we are, what age, what nationality, what skin color, nothing, it doesn't matter. We all have the same metal, if you want, the gold, yeah, the same quality of innate goodness, innate, meaning we're born with it. Yeah, it's the real thing. Innate goodness, that's the understanding. It's really, really important to remember that. And after that, here comes life and the baby starting to grow and the parents are doing their best to educate her or him. And Usually for most of us, it's not an easy task to be a child or to be a parent. And then the child gets more and more like this and more layers of, yeah, defense, you know, yeah. It's like this also in Germany, I bet. Yes. And then the next thing online, the next thing that happens is we get confused. We think this is who we are. This layer, this thick layer, it's who we really are, but it's not. Another very interesting thing to look and pay attention to is to see that this whole big city, many, many, many people in this city of Sukhothai forgot. Nobody remembered that their Buddha is made out of gold. There was not even one grandmother who can tell her granddaughter very secretly, look, you know, this Buddha actually has gold. No. Everybody forgot. And this tendency of forgetting is very, very human. It's one of the most human tendencies that we have as species, to forget. The word mindfulness is actually the root of this word in Sanskrit or Pali. It's remembering. It comes as opposite of this forgetfulness. And of course, we can go about our lives and forget many things, where we left the keys, where we left the shoes, what I've been told last month, and all these things. This is one level of forgetting. And it grows, by the way, as age grows. It's a natural thing. But this kind of forgetfulness is another kind. Yeah. And with this kind, we are working. We are working with the tendency to forget that makes our life miserable. Because if we remember who we really are, something completely different can happen in our experience to life, and actually in our lives. If we remember that we have Buddha nature, we also remember that others have Buddha nature. So we are not confusing the layers, the thick layers, with the core, with the truth. You understand? The analogy is clear, yeah? Now, does anyone ever worked with mud, built with mud? You know mud building, like cob and this kind of stuff, no? You don't have it in Germany? Probably you do, somewhere. It's
a cob house, it's a building with dirt, mud, water and dirt.
Yeah, you mix cob, it's called.
Mud is like mud. Dirt and water.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. I built one myself in Israel. It's really, really nice. You actually just take earth and you mix it with water and some hay. You need some material, yeah, some hay. And after it dries, straw, yeah? And you make like small little balls, and then they're still soft with the water, and then you put them together, and when it's dry, it's really, really strong. It's so strong, and it's also flexible. It's very beautiful, and you can make all kinds of things if you want to talk to me later about it. But what happens when you want to undo a wall, or when you want to peel off this layer of clay off this golden Buddha? What do you think you need? How does it work? It's already very, very hard. What do you do?
Water.
Just, exactly. Just water. If you come with this machine, you know, it's not going to work. Why? Because the gold inside is very, very soft and it can harm it. Yeah. So you come with water, but water enough is not enough. Water itself is not enough. What else do we need? What do we need? Okay, we come with water, and then what? We have a bucket of water. We want to peel off this Buddha. What do we do? Do you know? Yes, exactly. We pour the water, or rather, we take a sponge, if you really want to know how it works. You take a big sponge, and you dip it in the water, and you start scraping. You know, it's a lot of effort. The hand is really, a lot of effort. And little by little, the water zip in, gets inside the mud, and then it just, some of it falls down in like big chunks, some of it less, you know, small pieces. But sure enough, you do not damage the gold, yeah? And all you need is very, very simple materials. Like the material we are made out of, we're made of 70% water. Yeah, it's not like some kind of complicated material that you have to buy somewhere. No, it's here. It's very, very accessible to all of us. And just the same way we work with our inner layers, so to speak, yeah? What is water? The qualities of the heart. We need patience. We need care. We need kindness. We need friendliness. These are not just nice words to be a nice Buddhist. No, forget about being nice Buddhist. It's about being practical and getting straight to where you want to go. So water and effort, as Nils was saying, effort. You need energy. It's hard work sometimes. You know, you've been sitting here whole day today, just one day. And you may think, oh my gosh, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to make it another day and another day and another day. A full-on retreat. How am I going to survive? There's a lot of effort involved. And yet, this is something very precious. We can do and participate in as human beings. Very, very precious. We simply sit, trying to be mindful, trying to know our breath, our bodies, sounds, whatever the instructions are. And immediately the mind goes all over the place and we start judging ourselves maybe. Oh, I'm not good in this. Oh, the others are really, really sitting I should be sitting like that. And we sort of look a little bit and we see everybody's looks so professional. And only my knee making problems. And if this knee would not make problems, I would also be. And we are caught up in these layers, yes. And it's hard work. It's hard work to notice, okay, now I can go back. I simply can go back. Even one moment of remembering, hey, this is just a story running in my mind now. What is real? This body here reminds me of what is real. This breath here reminds me of what is real. I let myself loose of the net of stories into the actual real experience of the here and now. This is where life is happening, if you noticed. Not in the past, not in the future. This is the only place and time that life is happening. Good news. So there are many ways in which we can take this sponge, how you say, schwamm? I think it's the only word I know. I took a whole year of German in the university and the only word I know is schwamm. This is incredible. So you take this schwamm, but you see it's very helpful now. And very slowly, very gently, with a lot of care, you practice with it. You practice with it. And how do we practice? What do we do? So, for example, if the instructions are, as we had, to go and notice the breath. Yeah. Have you noticed the in-breath, the out-breath? How do you say in German, in-breath, out-breath? You have
Atmen, aus-atmen.
Okay. In ein-atmen, aus-atmen. Okay. So, apparently two different things, right? But as we heard from Eleanor this morning, it's more like a circular thing, right? And also there are like two little gaps in between. This is something really cool to start to notice as well. And have you noticed sometimes the breath can be heavy, sometimes it's light, sometimes it's really deep, sometimes it's really shallow, sometimes it's almost unnoticeable, sometimes very fast, sometimes very slow. It has different features at different times. And this is according to our states of emotions, a state of mind, our bodies. This varies. In this kind of practice, we do not necessarily want to know why the breath is like this now. It doesn't matter so much. What really matters more is that we notice. We simply know. It's such an art just to know and not to react upon it, because usually we need to do something about it. The breath, I'll do it like this, I'll do it like that. No, we just, breath, okay, easy, just breath. And little by little we practice with the mind just the same as we do with yoga. You know, yoga, we were talking, Eleanor and myself yesterday, yoga was actually invented or presented to the world, to us people, so it can support the work with the mind, the meditation, the stability of the mind. So there's not really a clear-cut line where is meditation and where is yoga. It's one thing, really. This is a physical meditation and this is a yoga of the mind, when we sit in meditation. But it's good to remember that everything we do here is here to support this kind of practice. And why do we practice like that? It brings clarity to the mind. When we sit and we simply allow ourselves to be with one thing, one simple thing, like the breath, one object, we call it, the many, many, many routes that the mind used to go is really in custom, in a habit to go, starting to lessen and lessen and be less and less and less, And this starting to change something in our minds, even in our brains, by the way, Today it's like a really big interest in the science to explore the minds of meditators, and I think there's not a month that goes by without somebody asking me to go and participate in this kind of research and all these kind of things. The science gets really fascinated with meditation and with mindfulness, and it's beautiful, yeah. And we learn a lot from it. For example, that it's really changing something in the way our brain is working. You can really see changes. You can locate changes in. I'm pointing here, but it's usually here in this front lobe. Yeah, changes. But when we take a good look, and this is an ancient teaching from 2,600 years ago, and it's very relevant till today. When we simply, with one object, when we notice, when we pay attention without reactivity, something is changing in our inner being. Our well-being is changing. We are learning a skill that we once knew and forgot. It's so much about learning again. So nothing is really new for you. Nothing is really new for either of us, but we forgot. So we need to learn it, relearn it again and again and again, and remember it again and again. And this is the hub, this is the heart of mindfulness. The word vipassana, sorry, says in this ancient language, it means insight. Means insight. You know what insight is in German? Yeah? How would you say insight?
Einsicht.
Yeah.
Einsicht.
Einsicht.
That's similar.
It's similar? It has the
insight.
Same. So it has the same root also like seeing, right? And it's the same root in English and German now, I understand, and Sanskrit and Hebrew and other languages. It's really interesting, the connection between seeing and understanding. Yeah. So it's not just seeing with the eyes of flesh. It's seeing inwardly, insight. And then you got deep understanding of the world, of ourselves. Yeah, it's really cool to look at it this way. And when we simple with ourselves, we are simple with the world, and we simply practice in that way, we make ourselves available. Meaning, let's say you have a garden, okay, and you prepare it for the winter or for the summer. You know, does anyone like to garden? Do you have a small garden or maybe a small little plant in your house? Okay. So you know how it goes. You have to prepare first. You take the stones away and you put some good soil, yeah? And then you make small holes for the seeds, and then you put the seeds in the right time, in the right moment, in the right season, the right seeds, right? And then you water them and you wait for the sun. And then you water them again if there's no rain. And if there is rain, maybe you cover a little bit and you take care in this way. But that's about all you can do. The rest belongs to nature. You can't really sit next to the flower and like, come on, please grow, grow faster. I've been working so hard and I'm waiting for you to grow. We don't do that, right? It doesn't make sense. So we do what we can do. There's a lot of effort we need to do. But a lot of the process is not really in our hands. And it shouldn't be. It belongs to life. Also, we belong to life. This is another talk. But for now, just for the sake of understanding what we're doing here, this is our garden we are cultivating. Yeah. The mind, the body is our garden. This is our temple. And we are doing the maximum we can. And it's hard work. It's really like going to the gym or practicing this Ashtanga for the first time for some of us. Whoa! And we admire those who are practicing for a few months or years. Yeah, and we look at Eleanor, the way she moves, and the others. Wow, you know, it's hard work. It didn't come like this from the sky. And just the same with meditation. For some of you, it's the starting point. It's maybe the first days. that you're doing this, right? Remember, it's so much about cultivation. You know this word? Cultivating, yeah? So this is the garden, and this is what we do to help the insights grow. And what is this? What are these insights? They are insights that liberate us. The Buddha referred to it as liberating insights. And they can be very personal, for example. Really has to do with my own little patterns of history, of this, of that, and relating to others and being in the world. And they can be global, universal also. Like the understanding that everything changes. We all know everything changes, right? But if we really knew everything changes, it would change everything for us. Really. If we really deeply, deeply had this view, this understanding that all the time everything changes, something in our grip would be less of a spasm, more of an open hand. You understand? One moment your life is a stone to you, and the next a star. It's a beautiful line by Rilke. Yeah. One moment your life is a stone to you, the next a star. And so often we judge ourselves and our lives by the way in which we look at them. For example, we sit in meditation and we find ourselves dozing off, falling asleep, and immediately the inner judge comes in and says, ah, I'm such a bad meditator. I shouldn't be sleeping right now. Everybody sits so nice and only me, I'm like the last in the class. And we start into rolling in this pattern, if this is the pattern that we have, running in the pattern of self-blame, judging. You know these patterns? Yes, everybody knows these patterns quite well. But actually, the meditation asks us to have another look at what is going on. For example, as we talked before about what it means to fall asleep in meditation, we understand this is not a problem. It's simply a guest. It's simply a situation. A guest has come to visit us in meditation and in life. Meditation and life are not two separate things. Maybe you guessed it by now. It's one thing. We are sitting with life. Yeah. What is meditation? A human being sits with her, his life. So one of the guests that might come is this guest of sleepiness. Another guest that might come is the opposite, the twin opposite of it. What might that be? What do you think? What do you guess? What's your guest? For example, restlessness and doubt, restlessness and not feeling stable. Have you heard this? If you haven't felt it, something is wrong. You should have felt it by now. Oh, I'm so restless, I can't really sit. What's going on, you know? It's a guest, you understand guest? Yeah. That comes to visit the mind when we are practicing calmness, we are practicing focusing. It should be like that. It's normal that it comes. And then we want to know how to work with it. So the fact that it's here, it's very, very normal. Like the sun is coming now, okay? Or the rain will come at some point. This is very normal. We sit and this kind of guests are coming, like sleepiness or the opposite. How do we work with it? Yeah. What do we do? This is really important to know. So how do we work with restlessness, for example? Yeah. Just in the same way, we observe sound, we know breath, we know sensations, we notice without reaction. We notice without judgment, as much as we are able. We simply go to the bare sensation of this guest. And I'll give you an example. 2,600 years ago, the Buddha was telling this story. He says a man or a woman goes into the forest in India, yeah, and out of the blue, somebody shoots an arrow and chuck, hits him with an arrow. This is quite painful. Yeah, this is not a nice thing to do. He doesn't know what happened. He just sees this arrow stuck inside. This is pain, right? First arrow, pain. Now, in this story, what this woman or man is doing, instead of taking the arrow out, yeah, they take a second arrow and put in their body and hurt themselves. This is weird, no? Instead of stopping there, they take a third arrow and put in themselves, yeah, hurting themselves with the third arrow and the fourth and the fifth and many, many arrows. This is the story. This is the simile. What did he mean? What did the Buddha wanted to tell us? The first arrow is pain. The first arrow is sensation in the body. The first arrow might be the sensation of, let's say, even like similar, let's take a similar example, like piercing sensation. It happens. We sit in meditation, all goes well, and all of a sudden our knee really hurts, right? And we have this piercing sensation, yeah? What is the next arrow? We think, oh my God, something is really wrong with my knee. This is fear. The second arrow. The third arrow might be anger. Oh, this is not good. Or anger towards ourselves, so anger towards the meditation, or towards the world, whatever. The fourth might be embarrassment, the fourth arrow. So, and on we go, and we completely forgot about this first sensation, yeah? And we are all covered with so many arrows that, in a way, we brought upon ourselves. And the big, important part of being free is recognizing this process and stop doing it. Simply stop doing it. Does anyone had a leg that went to sleep during meditation? That's a good example. Can you raise your hand? Oh, okay, okay. So what is happening when the leg falls asleep? Yeah. What are the sensations? Tell me. Pins and needles. What else? What else is there?
You didn't feel anything.
Exactly. Sometimes you don't feel nothing. Not a feeling. Yeah? Not a sensation. What else can be? Anything else? Pain sometimes. Yeah? But why do we call it sleeping leg? What? Did this leg took a pajama and went to sleep and now I'm waking it up? What is really going on? It's different sensations. And we are creating, with many, many different arrows, a story around it. And we relate to the story with fear, that's another arrow, or with aversion, that's another arrow. Because alongside with these two guests I talked about before, the sleepiness and the, this kind of not being restful, but being unrestful, how would you call it in English?
Agitated.
Restlessness, yes. Agitation, restlessness. There are a few more guests who can come. The first one might be the guest of, I want something that I don't have. I really, really want something that I don't have now. This is the name of this guest. You know this guest? I really want a different kind of temperature, for example. I really want a different kind of body so I can practice yoga. I really, really want this extra piece of bread, whatever, cake, this delicious food. I really, really want, but it's over, it's gone, yeah. So just look at this movement. Look at this movement that we often do in our inner world. And it's coming from the sense of lack. There's something missing, something, we are lacking something. You understand lack? Yeah, there's some kind of hole within, and we really want, and the whole view becomes really, really, really narrow. Like, ah, I want it, I don't care about anything else, I have to have this cake, I have to have this or that, yeah? We'll talk a lot about this kind of movement in the mind, and the opposite one would be, I don't want it. I don't want it. Yes, I don't want this kind of weather. I don't want this kind of, what? Carpet. I don't want this kind of, I don't want this kind of emotion. I don't want this kind of memory. We are trying to push away this which is present now. So we want this that is not present, what is not present right now, and we do not want that which is present. This is very interesting. Look at these two guests, the push and pull of the mind. All the time, this is a pendulum swing. Again, push and pull, you understand this? Push and pull, and we're all in this soup together. The fifth one, they're very classical ones. The fifth one is the doubt. Doubt about ourselves, doubt about others, doubt about this whole thing, doubt about this whole world. And the doubt is a very tricky guest, the doubt. He would whisper in your ear that he is the truth itself. Maybe you're not very good in this kind of thing. It's not for you. It's for young people. It's for old people. It's for this people, for that person. Just not for you. Yeah. This is the voice of doubt. The voice of doubt has the potential to stop practice, right? As a practitioner for many years, the voice of doubt is to be really, really looked after. It can stop not just practice, it can stop our lives, you know, when we really wait for this kind of reassuring from the outside, and we would not move unless we have this reassurance. We can be stuck for a long time, sometimes years, sometimes the whole life. So this is another guest, and we want to recognize doubt and seeing doubt as doubt and not confuse doubt with truth. Yeah, you understand? We have enough material to work with? Yeah, good. So to review, I remind us all the Buddha nature, yes, this simile, this beautiful simile of layers and then the gold inside. And you can ask yourselves, from where am I operating at this moment? From where am I operating? Is it from these layers or from another place? Yeah? And this is practice. To get to know where are we operating from. And I will speak later more about the layers and all of that. But very gently, not like as another story to tell you yourself, but just to check. What are the guests that are present right now in my experience? Is it the guest, the twin guest of push and pull? Yeah. I want something that is not present and I push away something that is present. And how can I relax my attitude with these guests? These guests are very normal. They are part of the protection mechanism, okay? At one point, they were very, very useful to us. But mostly, they are not anymore. So, and we'd like to recognize them. The other set of guests, you remember? Sleepiness and restlessness. Sleepiness and restlessness, are they present now? And how do I want to work with it? Yeah. And the fifth one, she comes alone because she's enough in herself. She's quite strong. What is she or he? Doubt. Is it doubt in my mind right now, disguising as truth? Just notice. Just ask yourself a notice. It's really about the yoga of the mind. And when the mind is more and more clear and more stable, it can be more and more free, the more and more insights that can come and change our lives to the better, to the best, actually. This is how it works. Make sense? So let's sit with these reminders, a few more moments together in silence.